Thank you for listening to audio from Midway Mennonite Church. You can also listen to our sermons each week by subscribing to the Midway Mennonite Podcast. If you live in the Mahoning County or Columbiana County area, we'd love for you to come engage with our faith community. For directions and worship times, visit us at Facebook or at MidwayMennonite.com. Thanks for listening.
One of the advantages of setting up here is you get to see all the smiling faces. And they were having fun. So I think we have a beginnings of a big band up here, you know. So they were really working on it. So that was great. And there's hardly enough room to move here. So if I fall down, it's okay. I'll be reading from Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I am not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do. When I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of the master's debtors and asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' 900 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 450. Then he said to the second, 'How much do you owe?' 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, 'Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it's all gone, you will be welcome into eternal dwellings. Whosoever can be trusted with very little can be trusted with much, and whosoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in dealing with worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you your own property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money."
Good morning. So we continue our series. We're looking at a story Jesus told in Luke's gospel. Last week we looked at the parable of the prodigal son, or as I mentioned, we talked about more accurately described as the parable of the prodigal sons. So one of the most well-known, beloved parables of all Jesus. And then immediately in Luke's gospel, right after that parable, we have this parable of the dishonest manager. Another of Jesus' most well-loved and known parables, right? This is their favorite parable? This is like a little bit of a strange story, isn't it? Like if you're listening to the read, if you weren't asleep during the reading, you should have been like, "What's going on here?" At the end of the story, we'll talk about this, but it sounds like Jesus is saying this dishonest manager, like he's being commended. And then we have this odd verse where Jesus is talking about the people of the world being more shrewd than the people of light. And what does that even mean? So it can definitely sound strange and confusing. It is actually one of my favorite parables. This is really odd, I was thinking about this week. Of all the Bible, I have spent more time studying this parable than this passage, than any passage in the Bible. Which is weird, it just happens to be, I had to do a very in-depth paper on this number of years ago in seminary. And so it kind of has a special place in my heart. And the reason I chose it, because I was like, this is such a bizarre parable. What is going on here? I think actually, and we'll get to this, the basic point I think is fairly straightforward, but there's these various places where you can easily kind of get hung up and just kind of miss that. So let's dive into the story. The parable is printed in your bulletin. Also, I don't think everyone maybe recognizes, there's a place on the back if you want to make some notes. I'll try to highlight a few things. So you've got the passage in your bulletin, then you've got a place on the back if you want to take notes. So first thing, who's Jesus talking to? Because this is important. We read that he's talking to his disciples, which is a change from last time, because the last parable was addressed to two groups. Do you remember those two groups? It was the sinners and the tax collectors were one group, and the other group was the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. So that was the parable of the prodigal son was addressed to those groups. And then we have this parable now addressed to disciples. So people that are following Jesus then, and Jesus is going to try to say, hey, this is how my disciples, this is how people who follow me are to handle their possessions, their resources, their money. And so if you are a follower of Jesus, like, we need to be hearing this as spoken to us. This wasn't just spoken a couple thousand years ago. Like, we are disciples of Jesus. We need to hear this spoken to us. If you are not following Jesus, like, I am super glad you're here. This might even sound weirder to you, what we're going to talk about, but let's get into it here. Can you project that first slide? Let's look at this first couple of verses. Jesus told his disciples, like we talked about, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer. Thank you. So two main characters in our story. There's a rich man, and then there's a manager. And this manager, so think about it, this is someone who would manage basically the finances of the house. If you were wealthy then, often you would have somebody whose sole task was really to manage the assets, the finances. This isn't entirely different from now. If you have a lot of money, maybe not even a lot of money, there's often somebody who will take charge of managing those assets. And we learn that this manager has been accused of wasting the rich man's possessions. This is interesting. There's this word wasting, and it's the same word that's used in the parable of the prodigal son. So remember, in that story, what has the prodigal son done? He wastes the resources that he inherits, that he gets from his father. He squanders it, wild living and prostitutes and all these things. And now in this one, we have this manager who, again, wastes property. Same word in Greek used there. So there should be some hint like, there's probably a little bit more connection between these parables than we might first recognize. We have a prodigal son, and we have a prodigal manager. Okay, so manager is called in, give an account of the way you wasted these possessions. Meaning he's going to get sacked, right? He's going to get fired. Manager says to himself, what shall I do now? My master is taking away my job, I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. So he has this moment of realization. He's older, he's probably older at this point. He's probably lived a pretty comfortable life as a manager. He realizes, like, I'm not going to cut it as a manual laborer. Like, digging in the fields, like digging ditches, digging in farm fields, I mean, that's not going to work for me. I think we get this, right? Like, you pull some people from a desk job, and you hand them a shovel or a wrench or whatever, and you're like, that guy's, he's going to be in trouble. Or that gal is going to be in trouble. But he's too proud to beg. So he's like, that's that guy. Like, that guy, if he gets a shovel, he's going to be in trouble. To his credit, he's self-aware enough where he's like, man, I'm not going to cut it. I'm not going to cut it farming. He also realized, I'm too proud to beg. I'm not going to do that. So he has this moment of realization. Interesting. Remember the prodigal son? He has this moment of realization. I know what I'll do. Comes up with a plan. Prodigal son came up with a plan. Calls in each of his master's debtors and asks how much they owe him. How much they owe the master. First guy says 900 gallons of olive oil. Manager responds, sit down, make it 450. Let's call it good. The second person comes in. So the first one, he cuts the debt in half. Second one comes in. What do you owe me? 1,000 bushels a wheat. Let's cut it down to, I think it was 800. So 1,000 bushels of wheat, that's like That's enough to feed 150 people in a year. That's, at that time, what you would expect out of 100 acres. So this is big debt. Like the olive oil, that's like 150 trees. So what the manager is doing is he's doing some pretty big business transactions here. He's doing some major debt reduction. And it comes at a cost, right? Who bears the cost here? We've got the rich man and the manager and these other people that are in the debt. Who's bearing the cost here? It's the rich man, right? Good. Let's put this closer to our backyard. I did not ask for permission for this, so I'll just ask for forgiveness ahead of time. If I work at Whitmer's Construction, never hire me, first of all. Never hire me at Whitmer's Construction. And I'm put in charge of a $20,000 steel building, and I say to the customer, like, towards the end of the project, like, look, I know the estimate was $20,000. Cut it to $10,000. Let's call it good. That farmer, that guy, or that gal, like, they're probably going to be pretty happy. They're going to maybe, hopefully, feel like they owe me a favor in the future. Grace, on the other hand, when that comes through the office, probably not so happy about this, right? Like, Grace is probably going to fire me. Grace is like a pretty compassionate woman. I don't think there's going to be any flogging. I don't think there's anybody, any debtor's prison. Like, but it's going to be, you know, I'm going to get fired. If I go back to that farmer after I'm fired and I say, you know, I helped you out. Is there going to be a room in this new building that you put up for me? Now, like Mahoning County, Columbia County, he's probably going to say no. He's going to probably be like, you're a scoundrel. Because most farmers I know are really honest. And he probably went and paid Whitmer's for the rest of what he owed anyways. But in this culture, in Jesus' culture, there's a strong ethic of reciprocity. Meaning when you do something generous, you do something like a favor for someone, the expectation is that one day they will pay you back. I think this is a little bit harder for us to understand. Partly, I think I've mentioned this before, partly because we hold up as the ideal in our culture that you never want to really rely on somebody. Like the ideal, what is the ideal in middle upper class society? You get to the point where you just pay people to do it. You never want to actually owe anybody anything. That's not seen as cool in our culture. When I was living in Benin, this was the total norm. When I was living in West Africa, people invested in their future not by investing in the stock market. Most of them, that would have been just incomprehensible. Most of them, they didn't even have bank accounts. Some of them did, but most of them didn't. The way you invested in your future was you invested in other people. Let me give you an example. I saw this numerous times. Somebody gets sick in the village. They've got to raise money fast. They got medicine or they've got a hospital bill to pay. Oftentimes you have to pay the hospital ahead of time before you actually receive care. So they've got to raise money fast. You go door to door to people you know and you ask for money. Now likely that person you're asking for money, you have some connection with, they probably don't have a whole lot of money. But they're going to give you probably what they have. To be nice, it maybe. But part of that is that I'm going to give you money now because I know somewhere down the line I'm going to need your help. So in a sense, what they did in a very real way is they invested in other people in order to invest in their future. And that's what the manager in our story is doing. He's investing in other people, thereby investing in his future. But of course, there's a problem here. This isn't his money, right? It's his master's money. It doesn't really matter probably what culture you're in. This doesn't fly. So the original audience that's listening to this story, they know this is not okay at this point in the story. They know this guy is in trouble, and he really might get thrown into debtor's prison or get flogged. But that's not what happens, is it? And there's a twist, right? So I told you when we were talking about these parables, like something helpful when you're studying parables is look for the twist. Look for the surprise. Often, not always, but often that's going to be one of your keys to unlocking the meaning of the parable, what's really happening. So twist in the story, the rich man, the master, he doesn't throw him in prison, he commends him. Okay, that's the surprise. That's not normal. You sly dog, you rascal, you. I didn't see that coming. I had that feeling when I found out my son Jude had lobbied Rich, the congregational chair, behind my back to include a provision in the church constitution where children at Midway would have full rights to any candy in the pastor's study. You know, when I heard that, I was like, you sly dog, you. Like, I didn't see that coming, but I got to give you credit. You know, there's a little bit, I think, how that manager's feeling. So the master commends his manager's foresight. Manager's about to get fired, doesn't see any other options for providing himself, and he does something really risky. He decides to use his master's wealth to secure his own future. And he's commended for it. End of parable, right? Go and do likewise, right? Not quite. So remember, this is told to Jesus' disciples. It's part of Jesus' usual directives. Go and steal money from your boss, cook the books, and you'll be commended for it. That's not typical Jesus teaching that I know of. So what's going on? What's he telling his disciples? Remember, this is told to the disciples. First thing, this is going to be a little, we're going to kind of geek out in the text here just for a second, but this is important. Look at this word master, okay? The parable starts out, he's talking to a rich man, about a rich man, and then not long after that, the terminology switches, and we have this word Lord or master. So in Greek, that's kurios or kyrios. That could be a couple different things, that word. Master could be like, we think about like Jesus as Lord and master. Okay, it can be that. Most of the time when it's used, it's master in the sense of like the head of the household would be very common. So, but it's interesting, okay? So there's probably a little play here, like he's stealing from the Lord. So the manager is using resources that are not his to secure benefit for his future. Let's think about this. Let's think about this for ourselves for a minute. All of us are managing resources. If you got clothes on you right now, you're managing resources. You're probably managing assets in the bank. You're managing a house. Like, we're all managing property, possessions. Whose property is that? Like, if we believe in a God, if we believe in a God who created everything, including us, like, who does it really belong to? Like, does it really belong to us, or does it really belong to God? I don't know, I think we're really wheeling and dealing with money that's not ours. So we think it's ours, and we use kind of subtle language to kind of make the statement that's ours. Like, we say stuff like, sometimes we say like, well, we give 10% to God, and then we get 90% for us. Meaning God gets his 10% and we get our 90%. And it's a subtle thing, but Jesus isn't saying that. He's saying, no, you're stewards of money that's not yours. You're wheeling and dealing with resources and possessions and money that's not yours. So if you're making notes, first note, everything we possess in this world doesn't really belong to us. And I know that's like a little bit of a subtle shift. It has profound implications on how you actually work that out. Remember where we're at here. Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he's like, as my followers, this is how you should manage your resources. So hold on to that, because we're gonna need that to understand the parable. Verse 8. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. So you hear that word shrewd, and that sounds like a negative connotation. It also can be translated prudently or wisely. So, like, think about this. This is like in Matthew's gospel. Jesus sends out the 12 in mission, and he says, be as shrewd, wise, maybe some translations say, as snakes, and as innocent as doves. Not necessarily a negative connotation with this shrewd here, this word shrewd. And then he says, for the people of this world are more shrewd, we used to see this word again, in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. So as I said earlier, this is a strange line. Let me unpack this, because I think it makes a lot of sense once you actually look at it. So Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he's basically talking to people of the light, right? Usually the New Testament refers to people of the light as God's people. And Jesus is saying, look at this dishonest manager. He's a person of the world. He's not a person of the light. He's a person of the world. And look at how shrewd he was. Look at how wisely he acted here. He was about to get fired. He was in a really bad spot. But he had the foresight to use money that was not his own to ensure that he would be cared for once his job was gone. And Jesus was saying, that was really smart. Because now, in the story, he's going to be taken care of, right? There's this ethic of reciprocity in the culture. This guy's going to be taken care of. And then he turns to his disciples and says, if people of this age, this world, like this guy, if they will go to such extreme to provide for themselves in this world, how much more should you all, my disciples, do to ensure for an eternal inheritance? Let me say that again. So he's saying, look at this guy. He's going to extreme measures to secure his future. Learn something from him. Learn from something. How much more should you be doing for what is eternal? Verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Now remember what we just talked about. We as Christians, are we owners or are we stewards of possessions? We're stewards. Who does it really belong to? God. Okay. So Jesus is saying, take money that's not even yours and use it like this guy did. Invest it in other people. Pay off their debts. So that when it's gone, because it is all going to be gone, all the money, all the possessions, they're all going to be gone one day, you will have gained friends. You will welcome you into eternal dwellings. Look at this guy. He was so smart. He was so smart. He made money. He used money that wasn't his to make friends in this world. Do the same thing. Use money that's not yours, because this world's going to be gone, and you're going to receive an eternal inheritance. In other words, this sounds to me like investment advice by Jesus. So if you've ever met with a financial advisor, you'll sit down and they'll get this full picture of your finances, and they'll say, oh, we need to invest these assets. We got to invest these for your future, right? When do you want to retire? I want to retire when I'm 65. Okay, this is what we need. This is the assets we need for when you retire. And they'll say something like, well, of course, we can't predict how things go. Markets can go up and markets can go down, but we've got strategies. We can balance that portfolio. We can put some in stocks and some in bonds and some in CDs, and come retirement, you're going to be set, right? And that's typically the pitch you receive. And Jesus would say to us today, I think this would be his investment advice. Look at these people who spend so much time and resources thinking about their retirement. Listening to Dave Ramsey. Good stuff from Dave Ramsey. And making sure they pay off their mortgage and not take on debt. Jesus would say, that's shrewd. He'd say, that's smart what they're doing. He's saying, because look at what people are doing like that. They're investing for the future. They're taking care of themselves in their old age. And Jesus would say to us as disciples, we need to learn something from them. Because we all know something they don't know. We know this is all going to be gone. We know that at the end, all the money is worthless. And when it comes, when it's all over, what you really want is that long-term investment in eternal dwelling. Because the stocks, the bonds, the CDs, they're all going to be worthless. This is what's going to be really worth something. And you've got friends to welcome you. Jesus kind of pulls up the lid. He does this a few times. Remember that story of the great banquet? He kind of pulls up the lid. And he's like, this is a little peek of what's coming. And we saw a banquet. And I love this because, like I've told you, like golden streets and fluffy clouds do nothing for me. Great banquets and friends, I can get excited about that. So Jesus is kind of pulling up the lid and saying, hey, look, this is what's coming, before he closes it back up. And this is your investment strategy. And this is really interesting. I never noticed this until I studied this passage. But this investment strategy is actually sandwiched between two other investment strategies. We saw the one last week. So here's a way you can handle worldly wealth. You can be like the prodigal son. You can go and just waste it. You know, we saw that one. He ends up in the muck with feeding pigs and then has to make a turn. So you can invest your money in your own self-gratification. As Mennonites in a whole, I don't think that's been our problem as much. I'm sure there's exceptions, but plenty of people in our world that take that strategy, I don't think we've held that up as a very high strategy. But there's another way. And so just following this parable is another parable about a rich man and Lazarus. And this one Jesus starts to tell to the Pharisees. And he says, there was this rich guy, and he had a lot of worldly wealth. And he spent some on himself. He lived in luxury. But here's what I want you to notice is that he must have managed his wealth pretty well because he died with a lot of money. But there was a problem. There was a guy named Lazarus that was at the gate. And Lazarus was just waiting for the crumbs to come off of the rich man's table. And here's the problem, Jesus says, with that investment strategy, is that Lazarus, he ended up at the bosom of Abraham. And the rich man ended up in Hades, right? So he's like, that's another strategy you could take. You could manage your wealth really carefully, spend a bunch on yourself, but really amass lots of wealth. But that investment strategy doesn't work all that well either, right? The prodigal strategy of using it all on himself doesn't work well. He ends up in the muck. But thankfully, at least the prodigal son realizes it in time, right? He makes his turn. The rich man, he never realizes it until he's in Hades. He never realizes, man, that was a bad investment decision I made. And in the middle, we have the investment strategy to Jesus' disciples. Don't use it all on yourself, on self-gratification, but don't hoard it. Don't hoard it when there's people right in front of you in need. That's the investment strategy of disciples of Jesus. Take the resources entrusted with you and plow them into other people. That's your best strategy. That's your best return. And some of you might be thinking, totally honestly, like, I don't know about this. I get you. I totally get it. I get it. I'm with you. We put up the next passage. This is so you can say this is not like inconsistent with Jesus. Luke 12:33. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out. A treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is extremely consistent with Jesus' teaching in Luke about possessions. This is not just one time. This comes up time and time again in Luke's gospel. How do you do this? How do you take on Jesus' investment plan? I think it starts with prayer. I'm going to give you a few things. You can put these down if you want. I think it starts with prayer. I think it starts with prayer, really honestly saying to Jesus and to God, I kind of get what you're saying, but it makes me nervous. It makes me uncomfortable. It makes me defensive. Part of me wants to just kind of close off, get on to the football games this afternoon or whatever, so I can stop thinking about this. But I know you love me. And I know you have my best interest in mind. I know when I pray to you, my Father who art in heaven, I know that I'm entrusting myself for you to provide daily bread for me. And I also know you're a lot smarter than me. Sometimes I think we forget that. Jesus is our Savior, He's our Lord, He's our Master. He's also just a lot smarter than us. Jesus, I know, I understand that being your disciple means I've got to manage my resources differently. I've got to be generous with those resources. I don't just have to be generous, I have to be prodigally generous with those resources. And I say that because Jesus is trying to kind of shock us here. This is like kind of a shocking parable, and he wants it to be like that because he's trying to radically reorient you, the way you look at your possessions, the way you look at generosity. And until you realize, part of why you need to pray is because until you realize what God has done for you, until that generosity has kind of sunken into your own heart, it's going to be hard to practice this kind of generosity. We always start with the generosity that God and Jesus has done for us. That transforms our heart. And we ask the Spirit, help renovate my heart. My heart is resistant to this. Holy Spirit, I need your help. Work on my heart. And then, as you pray, you need to get more specific. You need to start saying, God, how do you specifically want me to use my resources? How do you specifically want me to use my surplus? And so what you're doing right there is you're kind of you're releasing back to God what's already His. And this is really good because now God can begin to open up your eyes. As your heart opens up, He can begin to open up your eyes to needs around you. And as you do that, I can almost guarantee you, you will start to see needs around you. Like some of you might be saying, I don't even know anybody in need. Pray this on a consistent basis and see how God answers that. See what God puts in front of you. So first instruction, we need to pray. We need to pray that God works on our hearts. And we need to pray that He opens our eyes. Secondly, you need examples and models. What Jesus is asking is pretty countercultural. It's not just countercultural to American society. It's radically countercultural to American society. It's pretty countercultural to American Christianity. This is not a super popular investment strategy. So you need help. You need community, and you need examples of people who are doing this. Your first example, and we can never get away this, is Jesus Himself. Nobody emptied themselves of more than Jesus Christ. Nobody became more poor than Jesus Christ. He had everything. He gave it all up. That is your first model. But you also need people on the ground. You need your brothers and sisters who are doing some strange things. I've been really blessed to bump into some people doing some prodigal, weird things with money. And I love meeting these people because they both make you uncomfortable, and then you're like, you're not like everybody else. So like one time I was eating lunch in Illinois with this guy who he'd been a pretty successful businessman in Chicago. And we were out in Artiskwa, and he had taken over an executive director position at a nonprofit. He was probably in his mid-60s, and he said, he wasn't bragging about it. He's like, yeah, when we took this position at this nonprofit, we realized we needed to divest all our assets. We got rid of them all. And I was like, whoa. And he wasn't with any regret. It was just, yeah, this is what we felt God was calling us to do. There was a story I read not long ago about a family who every year, so this kind of year, they come up to January 1st, they looked at their checking and savings account, and they zeroed them out. Gave it all to charity, and they started over that year from zero. This is, I could give you a lot of examples of, this is prodigal giving. And you need to bump into stories like this, because this is going to sound really weird to you. And there are actually Christians that are doing this kind of prodigal giving. Let's bring this closer to home. Think about some of you would be your parents, some of you would be your grandparents. I've heard several times stories during the Depression of people coming down from Youngstown, coming to your home or your parents' home, and needing food. And the way that I've heard the story every time is that your mother would take them back to the garden, and they would get them food, right? They would send them off with food. I've heard this story several times. I'm guessing your mother probably, that was a sacrifice for the family. That was prodigal giving. And we have some really good examples. And think about the assets we now manage compared to what many of our parents and grandparents managed. When they were sending them back in the garden, a lot of your parents and grandparents did not have very many assets. How much assets do you have right now? How much assets do I have right now? That's our parents and grandparents, all right? We need these people because this is hard. We need these examples because this is hard. This is so countercultural. So we need to pray, you need to interact with people who are doing this, and you need some perspective. I was at a preaching seminar a couple weeks ago at Old North. Just happened to be in a room talking about this passage with some guys, and this guy started telling a story about how his wife's grandmother had recently died, and at the moment of death, so this is his wife's grandmother, the thought that came to the wife's mind was, all these precious moments are worthless. You know those precious moments statues? I think she had collected like 1,000 of them or something. He wasn't critiquing the collecting it. He wasn't critiquing the grandmother. It's interesting to me, the one thought was, at that moment of death, all those precious moments were worth nothing. And this is what Jesus is saying. Like, this is all going to end, right? I mean, all that surplus money in your bank account, you realize the moment you die, it's worthless, right? I mean, we kind of need to keep reminding ourselves Because remember, our cultures keep telling us, build, 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 build. And as Christians, we're like, wait a minute, when I die, that's worth nothing. We are managing money that is not our own. And we need to be looking at, what does God want to do with God's money? Does God want his money piled up and hoarded? Or does he want it invested in people? We need to get some perspective. Like, this is all going to go away. Fourth, we need to start putting it into practice. So the reality is, some of you might be thinking, I don't have much to invest in other people. Okay. If you make $32,400, you're part of the world's wealthiest 1%. So I know not everyone's going to make that, but you don't have to back up far. Like, most of us are going to be in the top 5% of all the people in the world. So, like, most of us are in this boat together. I'm not trying to single anybody out. I put myself in this boat. I put you in this boat. There might be a few of you that are just genuinely have no assets you could give away. And that's, you don't need to feel bad about that. But most of us are in the top 1% of all the people in the world. And we have two really good opportunities coming up ahead. We have a really good season to invest in other people. Like, we've even got, people are doing it right now. They're investing in other people. And what I want you to look out for is an opportunity to invest in someone or maybe an organization, pay off somebody's debts. I don't mean, that might be literally, but invest something and take a chance on something. Like, come up to something and you're going to think, I could do this, but it also makes me uncomfortable and I don't know. And then pull the trigger. Pull the trigger. Think of all the times you backed off, you said, man, I could do this really generous thing for this person, and then you talk yourself out of it. Pull the trigger. For some of you, that trigger might be a $50 trigger. You don't need to feel bad about it. That could be a prodigal giving for you. So for some of you, that could be a $10,000 trigger. I'm not kidding here. For some of you, that could be, I'm going to plow $10,000 into this organization or this person. I'm going to take serious Jesus' words. I'm going to start putting them into practice. Secondly, like, we're coming up on a new year. I don't know if your family is like mine, but we typically look at our budget at the beginning of the year. And I want you to, if you do that, just before you work on that budget, just pray. Just acknowledge that whatever money you have, whatever resources you're managing, it's not your own. Let that sink in and ask God, what do you want to do with this money? Like, ask his guidance. If God's telling you, I want you to hoard it all, I would question, that's probably not God's voice, okay? That's not what we see, certainly in the New Testament. That's not the advice, it's just build up and build up and build up. The advice is plow that in other people. So you've got your budget, start thinking about, God, what do you want me to do with this money? Because here's the deal, I think Mennonites should understand this. Oftentimes we start to put into practice Jesus' teachings before they make sense. Loving your enemy doesn't make sense, right? Doesn't make sense. How does it become more sense? We start doing it. We start loving our enemies. So much of Jesus' teachings, if you wait for them to make sense in your mind, you will never do them. I will never do them. We will never do them. We've got to start taking chances. We've got to start stepping out and actually thinking, like, maybe Jesus really wants me to do this. Like, maybe Jesus isn't just speaking hypothetically. Like, maybe he's actually telling me, take my strategy, invest in people, prodigally, generously, shockingly generous. I'll tell you one more story. So I really love the songwriter Rich Mullins. Who knows Rich? Anybody know Rich Mullins? Yeah. You've sung one of Rich Mullins' songs, or God is an Awesome God, Step by Step. So a lot of Rich Mullins' songs became praise songs. And if you know Rich's story, part of what's so endearing about Rich is Rich was a prodigal son. Yeah, I think I have time to tell a story. I just recently learned, do you know the song Hold Me Jesus? You guys know that song? I just recently learned that song Rich wrote in a hotel in Amsterdam. His bandmates sleeping right by him. Rich wants to go to the red light district to go to the prostitute. And he's saying, hold me, Jesus. Don't let me do this. Hold me, Jesus. He's waiting for his bandmate to fall asleep so he can go to the red light district. So listen to that song now, and it will, like, have all kinds of new meaning for you when you realize that's what it is. So I say that because Rich was a prodigal son. But Rich, man, if you listen to Rich's lyrics, Rich was reckless in pursuing the Lord. That's what I always get. I'm like, man, this guy, he was different than the other songwriters. No offense, but a lot of them in the 90s. This guy was, something genuine was really coming out. And Rich was a prodigal steward, too. He was a prodigal son, but he was also a prodigal steward. In the 90s, when the Christian music industry was blowing up, Rich had a church. Everything he made off his music, everything he made off his touring, went to that church. The church paid Rich a modest salary, and Rich never really knew how much he made. He didn't even really want to learn how much he made. All that money then, outside of Rich's salary, went to charity. Rich was a prodigal son, but man, he was a prodigal steward. He was reckless with his finances. And one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite songs of Rich's is from the song Let Mercy Lead. And it goes, if we can reach beyond the wisdom of this age into the foolishness of God, that foolishness will save. If we can reach beyond the wisdom of this age into the foolishness of God, that foolishness will save. See, there's a foolishness of the age. The foolishness of the age is go blow your money. However, go to Vegas and blow a bunch of money on yourself. Waste your money. The age will tell you that's dumb. Don't do that. Short-term gratification. There's the foolishness of the age. And then there's the wisdom of the age. The wisdom of the age is defer your gratification until you're older, until you're retired. And make sure you've got plenty for when you retire. Save and invest that money. Preserve your wealth. That's the wisdom of the age. But then there's the foolishness of God. And the foolishness of God is doing neither. The foolishness of God is plowing your money into people now. The foolishness of God is being recklessly, prodigally, shockingly generous with others. That's the foolishness of God. And that's the foolishness that saves. And that's the foolishness we should be chasing after. Let's pray. God, as this week begins where we rest in your great generosity to us, you've given us so much, God. I ask for space this week just to rest in the bounty you've given us. And that bounty, most of all, is your Son, Jesus Christ, who's given us everything. God, we want to, from that, move out into the world and be recklessly generous with people around us in need. We want to take your teaching seriously. We want to put our trust more and more in you. God, give us the courage to do this. Give us examples who pave the way, who show us how to do this. Give us robust prayer lives, Lord, where we can honestly say to you, I'm scared, Lord, but I trust you. And let us, Lord, start to put this into practice. We ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen.